This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
Doctors Without Borders says as many as six people a day are dying at a camp for internally displaced people in the northeastern Nigerian town of Bama.
That's Chris Stein reporting from Lagos on the humanitarian crisis brought on by the Boko Haram insurgency. We'll have full details coming up. Also, Somalia's National Army kills eight al-Shabaab fighters and recovered weapons and munitions yesterday during a dawn attack on a militant camp. Opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi question the makeup of the Electoral Commission, and British voters decide today whether the country will remain in the EU. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, government officials say the Somalia National Army killed eight al-Shabaab fighters and recovered weapons and munitions yesterday during a dawn attack on a militant camp. Colonel Ahmed Mohamed Radishi told VOA the operation took place in central Somalia near Masagawa town in the Galgaldud region. He said one government soldier died in the attack. The town has been under al-Shabaab control for many years. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahamud is meeting in Baidoa with leaders of Puntland, Jubaland, Galmudug, and Southwest State to discuss security measures for the country's upcoming August elections. A court in the DRC today sentenced major opposition presidential candidate Moise Katumbi to 36 months in prison. He's charged with illegally selling property in the city of Lubumbashi. Katumbi is the presidential candidate of a coalition of parties challenging President Joseph Kabila. Kabila's term expires in November, but election officials say they are not prepared to hold a new election this year. Katumbi was sentenced in absentia. He left the country May 20th, a day after prosecutors issued an arrest warrant charging him with treason. Katumbi had hired bodyguards the government claims are foreign mercenaries. He is the wealthy owner of the TP Mazembe football team and a former Kabila ally and governor of Katanga province. Opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi are questioning the makeup of the Electoral Commission. President Peter Mutharika appointed the eight commissioners for the board, which critics say is dominated by the sympathizers of the ruling party. They say the move is a deliberate ploy by the ruling Democratic Progressive Party to rig the elections. Vincent Kondoe is a political analyst. He told reporter Lamech Messina there's a need for Malawi to introduce criteria to be used in the appointment of commission members.
The president will be seen to be acting within the framework of the law, but politically, we are not getting the political independence and neutrality of the Electoral Commission. The problem is that, first of all, the law does not provide for wider consultations. But when you look at elections, by their very nature, they're supposed to be broad-based. But when you look at the Parliamentary and Presidential Elections Act, it provides that the president shall appoint members of the commission in consultation with the leaders of political parties represented only in the National Assembly. This is the problem in itself. So it is not only unfair, but also unjust to leave out all other registered political parties and only pick those who are represented in the National Assembly. And maybe to add on to that, you find that we have a president who is appointing people to oversee a process where he himself is also a candidate.
Was the formula used based on maybe a popularity of the party or numbers in parliament?
The law just says each political party represented in the National Assembly should submit names. So we don't know what criteria the political parties, they themselves, they used in submitting those names. The president can only choose from a pool of people who have been submitted by the political parties themselves. So it is up to the political parties to choose people who are professionals.
Okay, but on the composition itself, how different is it from the previous composition of the commissioners?
In terms of the law, there is no difference, because the law says that the leaders of political parties must send the names to the president, and the president must choose from among the names which are submitted by the political parties. So legally, there is no problem. But politically, when you look at the characters and the actors who have been nominated into the Electoral Commission, the perception is that they are mostly DPP sympathizers. That's where the issue of perception is more vital. With how people perceive something influence the kind of trust that they have in that particular organization. So the perception is real, and that perception is a political question. It's not a legal question.
Can this appointment be reversed?
I'm not sure whether the law does provide for that. It does not, as a matter of fact. But when you look at the reforms which are taking place, I think this is food for thought, that our electoral law leaves a lot to be desired, and maybe some of the reforms that are forthcoming must include the reforming the presidential and parliamentary elections and the Electoral Commission Act itself.
Okay, so how do you think it should have been done?
I think the whole idea should be bordering on open market principles. That's how it's supposed to be done, ideally. Have open competitive process. People who can exercise and demonstrate professional capabilities, political neutrality, and they should have a proven track record of no partisan political linkages. I think that is what is needed and required. Otherwise, we're going to remain with the same problem of having an incumbent president determining the outcome of an election before the election is done. Hence, you'll notice that you will not have an election, but you'll have a selection process.
Vincent Kondawi is a political analyst. He was speaking with reporter Lamech Messina in Blantyre. London's financial community is betting that British voters will choose today to stay in the European Union. Midway through a crucial national referendum, British bankers and investors say they are optimistic that Prime Minister David Cameron's Remain campaign will win the day and save the EU from losing a major partner. Voting began this morning in Britain's historic election that by the end of the day will decide whether the country remains in the EU. Turnout was expected to be high among the UK's 46 million registered voters. The results will end a bitter two-month campaign that centers largely on immigration. 2 years of massive migrations to Europe from Africa and the Middle East became a highly sensitive and divisive issue in a nation whose immigration rate has doubled in 15 years. Supporters of the so-called Brexit say Britain has handed control of its borders to a European super state. Well, Africans are also watching the outcome of the vote. David Oberholzer is the co-founder of an investment training and research company in Johannesburg, the Strygen Group. Reporter William Eagle asked him if a British exit from the EU would affect trade with Africa, in particular the so-called economic partnership agreements that the EU has signed with many countries.
I think it'll have a major impact on trade. You mentioned the EPAs that the EU have started signing. When you look at the South African Developing Countries, or SADC as they're more commonly known, trade bloc, they have recently finalized the EPA with the EU, in which the UK is the second biggest partner to that EPA, with a lot of bilateral agreements between the UK and then two countries within SADC. So with Britain leaving the EU, that EPA would essentially be null and void because it is yet to be ratified by the South African government as well as the European government as a whole. So although it's in existence, it's not yet fully ratified. That's with regards to the EPA. A second interesting or problem that it might hold is that Britain or the UK does a lot of individual trade with African countries. It has a lot of bilateral agreements set up, but these bilateral agreements are governed by the EU. So should Britain leave or the Brexit happen, these bilateral agreements will also have to be renegotiated, and it might not necessarily be favorable. Currently, the UK has the purchasing power parity of the whole European Union behind it when it enters into negotiations. If they should leave the EU, the UK has to renegotiate, but with less purchasing power behind them, as well as being in a more desperate position looking for new trade partners, as the European countries are unlikely to allow them back into the European economic zone that quickly after leaving the European zone.
Some development specialists have said that a Brexit would undermine Europe's ability to take an ambitious role in global challenges, fighting world poverty, and even properly supporting the new Sustainable Development Goals, which conclude in 2030. Do you agree that development aid would be less focused and poorly coordinated without the UK?
I think it would definitely be less focused, not necessarily less coordinated, because the coordination structures do remain in place. The thing that happens is the UK contributes 12.5% to the European Union budget on an annual basis. For the European Union to lose that big share of their overall budget and still try and maintain their superpower or their world competitiveness will lead to a severe challenge with the loss of the funds, not having the UK behind them. I think a good door that opens up is the UK already does a lot of charity and outreach programs to Africa, which might then receive increased funding due to the spare cash flow that has opened up due to them not having to pay their European Union membership fees.
Are there any lessons for Africa, which itself has been working for years to make a stronger African Union and more efficient regional groupings?
I think the biggest lesson to learn from this is not to force into a overall African Union grouping, rather try and take into consideration the vast diversity on this African continent and create smaller subgroupings that work well together, that maybe have a supervisory unit to which they then separately report, rather than having a big conglomerate or the African Union that currently stands.
And do you think that Britain's exit from the EU would strengthen the Commonwealth? For example, could it be beefed up to be a more aggressive trading bloc?
I think Britain would definitely look to try and enhance their Commonwealth connection should they leave the EU, because they would have a severe lack of trade partnership or trade partners. In my opinion, I feel that the Commonwealth would lose its power within the region due to African countries moving away from the Commonwealth and bearing this resentment towards the Commonwealth and trying to utilize the Commonwealth as a scapegoat.
That was David Oberholzer. He's co-founder of an investment training and research company in Johannesburg, the Strigen. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. Listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 19 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Somalia's National Army killed 8 al-Shabaab fighters and recovered weapons and munitions yesterday during a dawn attack on a militant camp. Opposition parties and civil society organizations in Malawi question the makeup of the Electoral Commission. And voting began today in Britain's historic election that will decide whether the country remains in the EU. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Doctors Without Borders says as many as six people a day are dying in a camp for internally displaced people in the northeastern town of Bama. Chris Stein reports from Lagos on the humanitarian crisis brought on by the Boko Haram insurgency.
The 24,000 people forced from their homes by the Boko Haram terrorist group are living in a catastrophic humanitarian emergency at a hospital compound in the Nigerian town of Bama, according to Doctors Without Borders. The humanitarian group says 188 people have died at the camp in the past month, and during a visit this week, it counted more than 1,200 graves dug there in the past year, 480 of them for children. Spokesman for Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency in the Northeast, Abdul Ibrahim, said the people suffering most from malnutrition at the camp are those who have recently arrived from remote parts of the Northeast.
So because they've been in communities that were cut off without access, they couldn't get food and medical supplies in those locations.
He said NEMA has provided food and medicine to the camp. The UN Children's Fund also has a permanent presence in Bama. Nigeria's military last month launched Operation Crackdown, an offensive intended to push the Boko Haram militants out of their stronghold in the Sambisa Forest, which is near Bama. The Islamist insurgents overran towns and villages in Nigeria's northeast in 2014 and 2015, including Bama. They have been pushed out by a counteroffensive by troops from Nigeria and neighboring countries since last year, but insecurity remains. Ibrahim says the emergency agency hopes to coordinate with the military to enter towns and villages that have been cut off by fighting.
We hope to provide medicals and food, which is their major problem, what they are lacking now.
During the past 7 years, the Boko Haram insurgency has killed an estimated 20,000 people and displaced 2.7 million more in the region. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, and her two daughters will be visiting Liberia within a few days, followed by a short visit to Morocco. Reporter James Buddy is in the capital, Monrovia. VOA's William Eagle asked him about Mrs. Obama's trip.
I had a chance to speak with the Minister of Information of Liberia. I think we are told that perhaps the U.S. First Lady might be coming to Liberia by Monday, which is the 27th of June.
What are some of the activities that the First Lady is likely to participate in during her visit?
Mrs. Obama's trip to Liberia, we understand, is part of the Let Girls Learn initiative. This was started in 2015 by President Obama and then First Lady Michelle Obama. As part of the U.S. government's effort to address some of the challenges that are preventing girls, adolescent, young women, from attending and completing their education.
What's the mood in Monrovia in anticipation of Mrs. Obama's visit?
The city and the country, they're excited in anticipation of the First Lady's visit. This morning, I visited a school where Mrs. Obama is supposed to go to meet with young women there who are attending. And I met with the young high school students, grade school, high school students, and they're all excited, looking forward to meeting the First Lady, talking about their education. Some of them are talking to me how they want to finish their education, go on to be doctors, want to be engineers. And I did have a chance also to talk to the vice principal of that school, and some of the issues they face about girls coming to school and staying in school. Most often you see some of these girls, they need a social support, and sometimes they start school and don't finish because either they are pregnant. The vice principal told me that once they got help, international help, some of these girls have begun now to stay in school longer and to finish their education. So these are some of the things they hope that the United States will continue to help these girls stay in school through the kind of support that the United States is giving. And, you know, besides, as I was saying also, that the First Lady is also going to travel outside of Monrovia to a place called Kakata to visit another project there. She's going to meet with girls who are participating in another program called the GLOW, which stands for Girls Leading Our World. So she's going to be meeting with these young women.
That was reporter James Buddy in Monrovia. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, the World Health Organization today announced an emergency yellow fever vaccination campaign in Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The WHO regional director in Dakar, Senegal, says the vaccination effort in Congo starts in July in the capital, Kinshasa. Dr. Machisito Maiti says since December, there have been 347 suspected yellow fever deaths in Angola and 75 in the Congo. The epidemic began in Angola a couple of months ago and spread across the border into the DRC. The fever outbreak was also spread by people traveling to Kenya and China. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.